the motivation for going back was, oh my gosh, I remember how they made me feel when I could have felt incredibly stupid for skiing down the wrong side of the mountain. But they made it a service thing. You know, they made it wonderful and they made me feel so special, and that actually my stupidity wasn't a bad thing at all. And in fact, I got rewarded for it. So, and that's the reason why I go back. So I would actually say that being very aware of context is very, very important when guests are staying in a hotel, and listening into those situations to know how we can really personalize and tailor moments. So we're very relevant to guests' individual personal contexts.
Welcome to season 4 of Go Out and Talk to Strangers. This is Adi. I'm a nomadic architect and the founder of The New Movement, an architectural design studio that designs one-of-a-kind, innovative, and creative projects worldwide, using the built environment as a tool to help people thrive. During my travels, I am constantly meeting incredible people. People who are reshaping the way we live, work, and connect. The reason I started this show is because I want to highlight the ones who are leading the way. This is the place where I host thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders of unique projects to share their stories and insights. I want to invite you to be part of the change. If you are looking for something bigger than yourself, if you also feel that we can do better and standard is simply not good enough, you're in the right place. I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. On today's episode, I'm excited to welcome to the show Victoria Taylor. She is an experienced consultant and designer working with hospitality, luxury, travel, and entertainment industries to become the only in experience. She has an insatiable curiosity for human experience and believes that the humans and their perception of experiences define who brands are as experience providers. She is a human-centered future thinker with the ability to analyze and transcend trends, pairing cross-sector thinking and analysis to identify and create unique, meaningful opportunities. Victoria is contracted for a variety of unique projects. No two projects are the same, but all are underlined with a desire to put humans at the center and to create unique, the only, for customers. Let's begin.
Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be invited.
It is. It's lovely to have you. We had such an interesting conversation a few weeks ago, and I can't wait to see what we're going to discuss today.
I'm really looking forward to it, so thank you. Let's go.
Let's go. Okay, let's go. So where shall we start? How about we start with, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. That's a really good place to start, right?
Right, just arriving.
Yes, just arriving. I like the entry experience. I'm very well, thank you. I've actually just returned from a break, which was very nice. So I'm feeling refreshed and really good. Thank you. How about you? Are you well?
I'm well. I just arrived to a new city, so I did my morning stroll and I'm very energized and looking forward to our conversation. I loved how you framed it, the entry experience.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that you do. You help create experiences. And what brought you into doing that?
Oh my goodness, a million different things. I think anybody who works in experiences come from quite an eclectic background, right? I think we've all had, I think the best people in experience are people who have had a very different and unique series of life experiences. So there are lots of different things that led me here. A lot of my work revolves around the hospitality and luxury industries. So some of my very earliest jobs were within the hospitality industry. So, you know, I've worked the bar, I've worked doing the bedrooms in hotels, I've worked in a travel agent, and my uncle owned a travel agent. So I was kind of always very open to that kind of hospitality side of things. And then I started working with hotels with their marketing. Just a whole series of things. I've had various sales roles and I've worked designing experiences for hotels. And then it kind of got more and more and more. And then I think you just sort of become known and recommended for what you do. And here I am 11 years later. So there's a whole lot in the middle of that. But I've always had a background in hospitality. Yeah.
I love how you describe now experiencing different parts of running a hotel, from being a guest to working in the rooms, from working at the bar, and really getting to know what clients need, what guests are looking for. Can you share maybe an experience or a moment when you looked at something and thought, well, maybe we need to rethink that?
Yeah, I actually think I'm quite open to it all the time. So I think I can be quite hypercritical, but in a positive way. I think I tell you what, for me, is quite a big bugbear is that details are largely overlooked. Mm. And I think that details are so, so important. You know, it can be the tiniest thing that is just out and it doesn't make sense. And I think we see a lot of that in hospitality. Something that I find to be really interesting is when you walk into a hotel reception, you know, this is a handshake with space. So this is what I say, it's a handshake with space. It's the first time for a guest to have a handshake with that place and kind of say, hello, I'm here. And it's a hotel's opportunity to make a first impression. But that experience is largely transactional. So, you know, if you think of that reception experience when you walk into a hotel, it's always about filling in forms and handing over your card and you're given a check-in key. And it's a very transactional exchange. And I just think this is kind of a blueprint that has evolved over the years that happens in pretty much every hotel. And I think that's a real downfall, because this is an opportunity to create an amazing entry, as we've just talked, this amazing entry experience. And it's very largely overlooked. So I wouldn't say there's any one particular hotel, but I think there's certain blueprints that have evolved over the years that have just become the norm. I look at them sometimes and think, why do we do it this way? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my God. I have this thought for pretty much anything I see, right? Because, office spaces.
Yes.
Why do we do it this way? Or even life scripts.
Yeah.
Until that moment where we allow ourselves to question out loud the way we do things, we tend to just follow whatever we think it's, you know, what we're expected to do, both in life and in business and in design and in projects. And I love how you're helping brands and projects to find their uniqueness and to really celebrate it. You have this whole the one being the one concept. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the only concept, it comes from this whole, it's about being unique and being different in your own way. So it's not about following trends. It's not about following what everybody else is doing in sector, in industry. And this isn't just for the sake of being different. This is because of human beings. You know, if we look at how human beings have evolved and how, particularly since the pandemic, I always hate to come back to that word, but it changed things. You know, it changed things so dramatically. And I think, you know, humans are increasingly more nuanced. We have so many different desires, different needs and wants. And we tend to think that humans want the same thing. So, you know, one hotel does something and it's very successful. And this doesn't go for just hotels. This is all businesses and all sectors. But we see something being successful and then we just see replication and replication. So as things replicate, they become normal. And as things become normal, they become less interesting and less desirable. You know, we have to also look at what's happening digitally online. And actually, when there's so much choice and we see replication, 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 do you even care which one you choose if they're all the same? So the only is about weaving your very own unique, this is what we are, the only because, but not just it being about it being like an Instagram moment or, you know, or something that just stands out because it visually looks different. It's about weaving that only through everything. So weaving it through property, place, person, performance. There's so many different parts of this that it needs to seamlessly weave through to make sense. Because again, humans and consumers, they're far more intelligent. You know, they have so much choice that if you just pop something in there because it's different, it might capture attention for a moment. But this is all about how we create connection and how we create feeling with people. And we can't create feeling by just superficial elements. So, you know, this only concept has to really weave through everything. And it's quite hard to do, you know, it's actually quite hard to do because in a world where there is this sort of like copycat culture and let's follow trends rather than leading differently, you know, how do you begin to create something like the Oni? Because everything's kind of already been done. So I always say like a very good place to start with doing it is with unique pairings and pairing things uniquely together to create identities. There's so many approaches to it. I could bore you all day with all of the details of it.
Please, I would love to. Let's get some details. Like, for example, what do you mean by pairing?
Pairing.
Let's talk about an example.
Yeah, okay.
That you either saw or worked on.
Sure.
Where you paired some things that are not a natural fit.
Yeah, sure. And that's exactly it. So, you know, great example of this. You've got Zania Hotels. They're fantastic. For anybody that hasn't looked at Zania Hotels, have a look at Zania Hotels. You know, they've got this wonderful hotel in Nambia, and it's all about this 1920s vintage English explorer combined with the wilderness combined with this really unique deco, and all of these really untypical pairings actually create a phenomenal concept that you can't experience anywhere else. You can go on safari anywhere else, of course you can. You can do that in, you know, in Africa, in so many different parts of the world. But you combine it with this 1920s English explorer colonial style decor, all of these different unique pairings that you put together then make that concept very unique, and then that's woven through everything. It's not just woven in the design or the aesthetics or the choice of interior, you know, it's woven through service, it's woven through the experiences, the excursions, everything that fits around that, the food. So yeah, it's just taking those untypical pairings so people go, wow, I haven't had this before. I can't have this anywhere else, because then that's how you become a hotel that becomes oversubscribed rather than a hotel that's struggling to reach occupancy, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, because we are seeking experiences. We're seeking to feel something different. What's the point of traveling or even of hospitality? We all have beds. Well, most of us have beds back home. And, you know, it's even that concept of having coffee somewhere. I can make myself coffee in a kitchen. It would taste good. I can make it quite professionally nowadays. But the experience of sitting in a cafe and people watching and being served and maybe starting a conversation with someone who sits next to me, that makes it something worth living the house for and paying money for. And same goes for hospitality. It's not only that we seek a place to sleep tonight or a shelter. It is about feeling something new and exploring new parts of ourselves through the space, through that invitation to behave in a certain way. And it's really interesting to see how to weave ideas into different scales and to help guests explore the place in a new way. And I absolutely loved everything you just said. It feels like that the way to get there would be to ask the right questions.
100%. I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, we live in a world where we all like to think that we have the answers. And, you know, it's a very, we're an answer-led world. I have the answer to this. I have the answer to that. But actually, you know, we uncover more about the people that we are willing to serve and want to serve by being incredibly curious about who those people are and how we can serve them better, how we can become the Oni in what we do. And that does require a lot of deep questioning and understanding and then questioning again and questioning again, you know. And one of those really important questions actually is, how do we want to make people feel?
Yes, it
really is, because, you know, we're all in the business of emotion, all of us, you know, and hotels are emotion factories. Of course they are. They're not just places to lay our heads and sleep, as you've quite rightly said. They're not just places to sit in the pool and have breakfast, you know. They're places for shared conversation, developing community, for solace, restoration as a, you know, as a solo person, if you're on your own. There are so many different things that these spaces facilitate that we can't understand that without trying to understand the complex conditions of all of the different types of humans that we're going to serve. And the only way we can do that is by being curious and asking open questions rather than trying to label people under demographics, you know, because this again is another thing and another problem for all industries. You know, we say, well, Gen Z, they all like this. Do they? You know, you put two human beings next to each other, you know, you put you and I next to each other, and you know, we both work in similar industries, you know, we both maybe have similar backgrounds in some ways, but we'll both have very different life experiences and opinions that will impact our perception. And you know, just kind of saying that because this person is part of this demographic, they're going to follow this journey and they're going to feel this and they're going to do that, it's just not good enough today. You know, we really need to put those we serve at the center of our decision making and become far more curious about them. And that isn't just in a brainstorming lab or a, you know, a design charrette or whatever it is. It's a continuous process, because we should never stop being curious about the people that we're going to serve. You know, it's a constant evolving process, right from, you know, when we start designing to when we become operational to every part of what we do. But yeah, you're quite right. Questions are key and they sit at the center of everything. Yeah,
absolutely. And let's say, what are the questions that you like to start with when you're working with a new brand?
Yeah, sure. So for me, the feel question is so important. You know, how do we want people to feel? You know, that's a really important one. But then also, you know, we have to start with objectives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's the objective and what's the desired outcome? Who do we want to serve? And how do we bridge that so experientially we make people feel, but commercially we fulfill a goal? You know, because, you know, ultimately we've got those two things happening at the same time. You know, yes, we're all in the experience business, but we're here for a reason. And if we sat here and we said we're not here commercially, we would be lying. You know, all businesses flop or fly, thrive or die by the humans that we serve. So it's understanding those, you know, commercial objectives, the objectives of place, and you know, what the project desire is, and then how are we going to create that experientially? How are we going to make people feel? Because in order to make people do something, whether that's a purchase or a stay or whatever it is, first we have to make them feel something. So it's that feel question is always the starting point. And then those conversations, they can go down any rabbit warren. But those are kind of the main ones I would start with. You know, commercial objective, what's the objective of the project? You know, how are we going to bridge that gap experientially, commercially? How do we do that through feeling? And that's a really basic sum up of sort of a starting point. And there's obviously a million other questions that come from it, but that's a starting point.
It's such a great starting point, because ultimately this is what we remember. Sure. We remember places that made us feel something. I recently had a conversation with someone about the reason I traveled the world, right? And all those moments that are worth living for. Moments where you feel alive instead of waiting to live. And we all know that difference when you're just waiting, powering through until the end of the day to feel again or to be yourself again. And how would it look like a place or a lifestyle that allows you to be your full self, or even to be a guest somewhere that invites you to explore something new?
100%.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
So once you identified what we want people to feel, what's the next step?
Gosh, so there's so many different routes. It depends on what the project is, you know. It depends how long is a piece of string. It depends on what, you know, you're contracted to do. You know, we've been currently working on a project, a hotel over in Croatia. And that was, you know, starting right at the beginning from the foundations to when this becomes operational. You know, sometimes it's a part where something already exists. And it's, you know, we exist at X occupancy, you know, it could be a very low level of occupancy and we want to get to 100% or the oversubscribed, whatever that is. So it's very dependent upon the goal, the part of the project, whatever that is you're working from, to build out a solution from there.
Yeah, and that's the key, to find the solution. So I think the next step for me with what I usually work is to identify the problem, because we often try to get the right answers for the wrong question.
100%. And I think without really understanding that, I mean, that's the basis of all of it, isn't it? You know, we're mm-hmm. when we're in business, that's what we're doing. People contract us because we're there to help solve a problem, whatever that problem is. We say problem, like problem probably has a negative connotation attached to it. But problem is, you know, it's a, this is what we want to do. how do we do that? So yeah, it's a problem solving process, isn't it, to get to that solution. Yeah.
And what are some of the tools and methods that you like to use when you're approaching a new project?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's different every single time. You know, I have a model where I sort of weave this the Oni through a various selection of different P's. Some of those P's, I could perhaps share some of those slides with you so you can, you know, your viewers, listeners, sorry, it's not viewers, is it? It's listeners could, it you know, have a look through some of those. And it depends which of those are relevant. Go through a various sort of different world approach as well, where I look at sort of the child's world, the collective world, the secondary world, your world there. So there's various different worlds in the approach as well, which allows us to look at experience from multiple different levels as well. Because I think sometimes we can be quite singular in our approach, you know, so we can look at something from, you know, our own past experiences on our own intent. And actually this world approach allows us to step out of our own shoes and to think about the different perspectives as they might experience and experience. So that's in terms of sort of like experiential perception. But yeah, as I say, with this, the Oni, there's a various model of P's that I go through. There's various unique parents, there's experiential profiling. So similar to where we just talked about demographics there, experiential profiling allows us to look beyond demographics and think about how guests' past life experiences could help inform their perception of the experience we're about to put in front of them. So that allows us to sort of look in depth at various different behaviors, so context, various different social media behaviors. It's quite research led, to allow us to really observe those past experiences and start to build like what I call an open life picture of the people we're potentially going to serve, rather than saying X person likes X. Says, well, actually, how can we deeply look at who these people might be and what they've experienced before? Because their past experiences will impact the perception of the experience they're about to have as well. So we need to understand what those potential experiences have been before, even if we never fully know the answers. Mm-hmm. When we open our minds up to become curious about that and give ourselves more of a, okay, they might have experienced this and they might have experienced this. How might this experience impact the experience we're about to present? So it is quite granular and detailed and a bit different.
can you give an example for that?
What do you mean?
Like, I really like modeling. So for example, I don't know, someone who experienced something is about to come to something you're creating. Yeah. What could it look like?
Okay, so anything now. So you and I are having an experience here today. We're talking to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And this is an experience that we're having right now. Then from here, you might go to a cafe or a restaurant, or you could go to a hotel. But the experience, the conversation that we're having here now can impact your perception of that next experience. So you could take this experience here of what we're having as a good experience, or you could take it as a bad experience. Hopefully not, but you could take it as a good experience or a bad experience. And then actually, you know, our interaction, you might then be thinking about the server who's serving you in a certain way and kind of going, well, actually, is she as friendly as Victoria was, or is she like, is she operating on a different way? And we subconsciously do compare those experiences to the next experience we have. So I guess when we look at the experiences that people have had, so we could look at maybe an art experience. If someone's been to an immersive art experience, and we'll say, if this person has received this experience in X positive way, what might that feeling have looked like to this person who's experienced it? Or what might a bad experience have looked like here? And how would both of those outcomes potentially impact what we're about to present to them? So I think it's just understanding whatever we create. So if you take, for example, the 1920s colonial hotel with beautiful artwork, you know, how might somebody who's experienced an art gallery in an immersive space then perceive the art here in this 1920s colonial hotel? So once we've got the Oni concept, it's then thinking, well, actually, what are all the nuances of the people who are likely to come here because of X, Y, and Z? I hope that kind of explains it a little bit to you.
It does. It does. Well, it is life, right? So we have There's something I like to call your memory palette, which is your own set of experiences growing up until today, from opening your computer and hitting record and all that. But we can't really know for most people. We can assume, for example, if they go to a hotel in Africa, that they had a long travel before they arrived. They're probably a bit thirsty and need to rest when they arrive. So definitely the last thing they should be doing is bureaucracy and filling forms. Yep. And maybe they needed a completely different welcome.
Yeah, completely. Of course. And I think, you know, you say somebody's had a long journey to Africa, but maybe they haven't. It depends where they've traveled from. So, I think it's knowing again that people come from different starting points as well, because it, you know, it's not just our, like you say, our past bank of experiences. You're quite right. But it's also contextual experience as well. So what happens on that particular day? So, you know, if you come to an experience and that morning you got fired, or that morning you found out that you've fallen pregnant, or that morning you had an accident, God forbid. But there are so many different nuances and complex conditions that surround how we receive an experience. Now, those are very extreme examples, but they impact, you know. So I think it's really important. I always say to my clients that we have to imagine all of our guests here every single day almost behind like a race, you know, like a line of a race, but that they're all kind of staggered behind this line and they're all starting from different points. And you know, how they've come to an experience in a hotel on a Monday could be very different to the Tuesday, depending on what's happening in their life around it. So no, we're not necessarily going to have the answers to all of those questions, and we can't necessarily give definite answers, but it's really increasing the understanding and awareness how important those contrasting, complex and movable conditions are, so we can think with empathy when we're creating and building and designing spaces and places, to really get people thinking in that different human sense. Because a lot of industry thinks about ROI, heads in beds, you know, all of these very sort of tick boxes that we're used to seeing across all industries. But what that doesn't account for is complex human beings with very, very complex conditions, past life experiences, contextual experiences, all of those things that heavily impact the experience that they're about to receive. So a lot of it actually is quite a mindset shift, first of all, to then get to designing something that isn't just popular now or next time, but something that actually creates such a connection that people want to return time and time again, and it has the potential to become lifetime, you know?
Yeah, I do. Like that timeless quality that we're seeking. Yeah,
for sure.
That's, I think, the highest purpose of design, right? To create something that can last and can be also slightly different every time you come back there.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I think you've made a really, really good point there as well. Like it's, you know, when we create the only, for example, you know, whatever we're creating, we're not just creating it for now, you know, we're creating it for next. And I think we need to see what we're building as a continuation of story. You know, we might not have all the answers now for how that story, and in fact, the story shouldn't ever end. The story should just be ongoing and ongoing. But it's really important that can be adaptable. And you know, we have this wonderful, wonderful thing in the experiential world where, you know, we can work with artists and we can work with activations to actually carry through those that core identity of who we are to become malleable and changeable. So it encourages people to come back for a different reason, you know, for people to say, well, I loved my stay there, I really enjoyed it, that felt like a home, but where I felt like I could discover and be myself. I want to go back there, but I want something a bit more. I want something new. I want something exciting, which is where I think this whole activation side of it can be very successful. Again, we're seeing an oversaturation within activations. That rhymes. But we're seeing this kind of oversaturation. It is. But we're seeing this oversaturation of popularity. So something becomes popular in an activated concept and everybody does it. So it's, you know, how can we maintain originality in the activations that we create and make them consistent with our only concept? So we're not just doing something that's trendy, but so it's really unique, because otherwise then we're just activating the same as everybody else. So
let's just stop for a minute. Sure. and explain what activating concepts is.
Yeah, sure. So activating in the respect of it's something that is, you know, it's popped up, it's there. It's an activation in that moment. It could be art. It could be something immersive. You know, it could be a brand activation where they're, you know, activating their clothing on a beach in Saint-Tropez or what, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, an activation is something that is temporary. It's something that is constructed for a particular purpose or a reason. It's temporary. It's not fixed. Sometimes they can be more long term than short term, but it's temporary in its nature, and it's, you know, dependent upon the goal and objective of brand. Hopefully, yeah. I summarized that well enough.
No, you did. So all those pop up, I want to say spaces, but it's not only spaces. It's just behaviors. That's something that is a surprise or you didn't anticipate, and you come and there it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, we see a lot of it with sort of, you know, a lot of colour, a lot of sort of bright capturing your attention in that moment, which is wonderful. But then it's like, and what? Mm-hmm. That's a question I always like to ask. And what? What does that then mean? You know, if we're just activating something to create a wow, okay, that's fine. But what next? You know, what comes next? How does that story continue? And I would love to see more of that from brands, because I think rather than seeing that flowing story, we see a lot of trend following, which, mm-hmm. you know, is natural. All industries do it, of course, but I think we don't necessarily see a consistent story. We see lots of kind of mixed different activations that don't always make sense. And, you know, sometimes things don't need to make sense. But I think I would just like to see more of a kind of flow and, you know, and what, and what, and what. You know, how can we continuously engage our guests beyond this one-time activation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. How it weaves into that bigger story. And let's take a real example. Can you think of an activation that you participated in recently?
Yes. So I say activate. Yeah, it is an activation. So there's a place in London called the Outernet, and it's a sort of a digital, where they display digital art. So the actual location is fixed, but the various art is changeable. So yes, I visited one called the Summer Palace. That was amazing. Absolutely loved every minute of it. I guess their continuation of story, and because they do it well, is the different art that they show. So there's always this kind of what I call bring back ability. There's something different where I want to go back there. I had a great experience. You know, the sides were open. There was great. There was a great atmosphere there. There were brilliant people there. We were all very engaged. But there is that bring back ability because they provide that variety. So yeah, that was a great one.
Okay, so you're talking about the experience itself, but not the end of it, or let's say the next day. Because when you say, and then what, it makes me think of that.
Yeah, so I'm not thinking about the next day. I'm thinking about what's the next thing that this brand does that brings me back. So in the case of hotels, it's like, well, okay, I've come here this summer and the fixed, the only is amazing. It weaves through seamlessly. I've got that felt factor. I feel wonderful. I'd love to go back there again. What's going to captivate me next year? Could be an activation. It might be something that they do differently with the hotel. It could be that there's a, you know, something fixed that changes. But if they're going to do an activation, what's the then and what? What's my reason to come back again and what? You know, I've come back this time and what for next time? Or is my attention going to be taken somewhere else? Am I going to go to another hotel that takes my attention elsewhere? Mm-hmm.
You know? And what do you find? That's so true. And that's such a valid question. I guess if I'm looking at my own experience, I'll go back to a place where I formed a personal connection with the owner or with the team, and I can't wait to see them again and hear about, you know, creating that personal connection. But that's very niche. What would be other motivations to go back to a place?
I think that's Yeah, I mean, I think that's so different every time. And I think it's contextual as well. You know, for example, when I went to a place this year, I went there. I'd actually had a little period of time in hospital, nothing serious, but I'd had a period of time in hospital just before Christmas. And I felt like there was no air. You know, if you've ever been in hospital, you feel like there's no air in the hospital. Oh, yeah. So that made me think, I really want mountain air. I was craving mountain air, which is why I actually booked a ski holiday at the beginning of the year, because it gave me that mountain air. Now, when I went on that ski holiday, there was one particular day where I'd skied down the wrong side of the mountain. I ended up in the wrong part of the village, and I rang the hotel and I was like, I'm really sorry, it's Miss Taylor. I'm in the wrong part of the village. I don't know how to get back to the hotel. They're like, don't worry, Miss Taylor, send us your location. We'll come and pick you up. They came and picked me up, put my skis in the back, took me to the hotel. When I got there, they took my boots, they put them in the boot warmers, made it beautiful. I walked into the bar and the barman said to me, Miss Taylor, I hear you had a bit of an ordeal. Here's your favourite cocktail. And it was all ready for me, right? Mm. So it's those things and those moments. You know, the first motivation was the mountain air. But then the motivation for going back was, oh my gosh, I remember how they made me feel when I could have felt incredibly stupid for skiing down the wrong side of the mountain. But they made it a service thing. You know, they made it wonderful and they made me feel so special, and that actually my stupidity wasn't a bad thing at all. And in fact, I got rewarded for it. So, and that's the reason why I go back. So I would actually say that being very aware of context is very, very important when guests are staying in a hotel, and listening into those situations to know how we can really personalize and tailor moments. Mm. So we're very relevant to guests' individual personal contexts.
That's such a beautiful story, and I love how they took this as an opportunity to see you. You felt so seen in that situation. That's wonderful. So talking about those moments where things doesn't really go as planned, I'm curious to know if there was a time in your life when you did something that is maybe irrational and it turned out for the best.
Irrational. I'm trying to think. I would say that moment, probably completely irrational, was giving up a full-time career for launching my own business. And I think, you know, it's for anybody that has started their own business, it's a huge leap of faith doing that, you know, particularly when you've had a very solid salary. And, you know, I was in a great position. I worked as a field sales executive at a company called Yellow Pages. I say now for my sins, but, you know, at the time they gave me some great training. And, you know, it was very stable. I had a nice car. I had a great bonus. I did very, very well. And I decided that I was going to give it all up and start my own business. And, you know, I'd had a pretty decent bonus, and my late grandma, rest her soul, left a little bit of money to me. And I decided, you know, it wasn't a huge amount of money, but I decided that was it. It was time to start my own business. And I remember my family going, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to do it. And, you know, here we are sort of, you know, 11, 12 years later now, and I wouldn't look back, you know. And for anyone that's in business, you'll know there's highs, lows, ups, downs, and everything in between. But it goes back to, you know, that thing that you were saying, this is all about living and enjoying our lives. And I feel really alive in business. And I think when I was in a job, I felt like I was just existing. And although, you know, it provided me this sort of amazing stability and comfort, I felt like I was just existing, and it didn't really ignite that fire within me at all. But if I look back now, it's probably pretty irrational, because I had no idea how it was going to turn out. It was definitely irrational, but the best thing that I ever did.
Oh, that's so amazing. Yeah. Those leap of faith when you just, okay, right. I didn't know what I'm going to do, but it's definitely not this anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You just have those moments, don't you, where you're just like, yeah, this is it. I either do it now or I don't ever. And I'm glad that I did.
That's amazing. It's very inspiring that you had the courage to act on it. And it's been such an interesting journey ever since. I've been following. I highly recommend everyone who's listening to us to follow you on LinkedIn. You have such an interesting post and you bring fresh perspectives and very interesting story. Such a good storyteller.
Thank you.
It's really inspiring to follow your journey and the content that you're spreading.
Thank you.
Was there a moment that led you into making that decision, into making that life choice of changing direction?
What, from going from being employed to being, having my own business, you mean?
Yeah. And also to really, as it looks like, to work in something that is closer to your heart, that is more meaningful for you. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, completely. I think, you know, I was sat in these sort of quarterly sales meetings where, you know, people are being invited on stage to celebrate success. And it largely revolves around financials. And, you know, I remember sitting there, I was a top campaign achiever. I did exceptionally well. But having that applause and accolade, just, it didn't really make me feel anything. Yes, okay, there was a nice bonus that came with it, but I was kind of fed up of talking about figures. And for me now, yes, of course, everything equates to figures, but it first begins with feelings. And that industry was really not that way led. You know, it was very, very, you know, money. And it almost feels soulless. In a way, and I think I just thought, no, this is not the way I want my life to go. And you know, I saw a lot of people sort of climbing this ladder, this career ladder, and I just had no interest in climbing it or competing. You know, I'm very sort of collaborative in my nature, and I'm very fortunate to be able to collaborate with amazing creatives, amazing brands, amazing businesses, from all kinds of different backgrounds. And we were almost kind of pitted against each other in that environment. You know, it was very kind of, well, who's going to do the best this month? And I've just not really got any interest in that. You know, for me, I think we create a better world when we all bring something to the table, because we all have so many different experiences, and the corporate world never really gave me that. I felt like it was a real sort of pitting us against each other, and I didn't like it. Yeah,
I can relate. It's really is about, we're shifting from that industrial mindset to something that is so different, and it's so much more exciting, and see people as a whole and see the planet as a whole and as the complex system it is, understanding all those different layers that existence has, rather than just how much we perform, how much we sell, what are the numbers. And the numbers are important. Any business needs to pencil down and to be successful, but it doesn't mean it could not have a soul or have meaning and purpose and maybe have some positive impact on the way. That's not a word that we should be afraid of anymore.
I agree. I think there are certain parts of the business world that is softening, and I think that's really, really important. You know, you're quite right. Please don't think I'm sitting here and saying this isn't about commercial objectives, because of course it is. You know, all of our businesses thrive or die at the hands of our guests, but because they're changing so much, we really do have to look at humans first, because without them, that commercial output isn't going to happen. So, you know, it's reverse engineering the process and saying, okay, yeah, there is an ROI, and there is there are all of these things, and there is this commercial objective, but to reach that, we have to do things far differently now. You know, we all have very different values. We have things that we value far more than we ever did before. And I think, again, the pandemic has made us really appreciate life, people, humans, the planet, all of the things around us that we saw being taken away from us. And actually, I don't know about you, but I remember this wonderful, wonderful moment during the pandemic. And I hate to say wonderful because it was such an awful time. But I remember walking through my local country park and everything was so green, like greener than I've ever seen it. You know, the park was green, the sky was so blue, because there were no aeroplanes flying, you know, there were no cars on the roads, so everything just looked so beautiful. And I've never seen the park look that way since. So I think during that time, you know, we saw the world flourish, and we placed our value on more important things. We placed our value on time. And I think now we have these evolved humans and businesses that actually don't quite know how to reach them. We're trying to discover it, and you know, we're doing what we can to discover it, but we have to think in new ways, and we can't just think about metrics and outcomes, although that needs to be the end result. We have to begin with them, you know.
Yeah, to adopt a more flexible and creative mindset, that would be a great start. It's really interesting how this episode went, because usually we start more from the personal and the background, and then we get into the actual work and the business advice. But we started with this. But I want to bring us back there a little bit and ask you, if you were to give an advice to someone who's about to start a project, what would it be?
For an experience-led project or just any project?
Let's go with experience-led projects, because this is what we're going to see in the world more and more.
Yeah, I would literally say start with the human. Please start with the human. Suspend ego, design intent, and start with the human. Like, everything begins, lives, and dies with them. So become curious, start with the human, ask thousands of questions. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Follow-up question of this one. How could one become the only?
How can one become the only? Well, we've kind of covered that already a little bit in a way when we've talked we've talked about unique pairings. That's a good starting point. You know, if anybody wants to become the only, you know, you can come and talk to me for a start. I'm not here sort of plugging my business, but you know, at the same time, if there are different methods and objectives to reaching that, dependent upon project, and again, it's not a one size fits all approach. It's something that has to be taken on a per project basis. But yeah, unique pairings is a good starting point. I actually delivered a keynote about this a couple of weeks ago, and I said that's a good place to start, because sometimes it can be quite overwhelming to know where to begin. And there is a lot that goes into it. So, you know, if you're looking to start, think about how you could uniquely pair and what you could uniquely pair. But start with feeling, you know, start with that feeling first. What do we want people to feel? Then think about, you know, how we can make that make sense, and what can we uniquely pair. It's not always about unique pairings, but it's a good starting point.
It is. Thanks a lot. We have one last question, but before we get there, I want to thank you for coming here today and sharing your insights. And for anyone who wants to connect with you, where would be the best place to do so?
Thank you for having me. It's been really nice to talk with you. I would say LinkedIn is probably the best place. I tend to share insights on there a couple of times a week, where I'll sort of share my, they're almost like mini blog posts really, but I'll do a couple of weeks. So that's probably the way to stay up to date with the, you know, the most recent stuff that I'm sharing.
That's beautiful. And it always accompanied with such beautiful pictures and it's almost like traveling with you when I'm looking at your posts. So I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Amazing. Okay, so let's move to the our final question that I ask all my guests. It's called the Wild Napkin.
Sounds interesting.
So you're going to a bar. And let's say that you drink, I don't know. And you have a couple of drinks and your mind is really free. And all of a sudden, you have the craziest idea. But all you have is a napkin. So you write it down. The next day, you look at it. What does it say?
Oh my goodness. It depends. Well, it depends. First of all, it depends what I was drinking. So if I've had a champagne, that's not going to be legible. Oh goodness me. Wow. Do you know what? That's a really interesting question. And actually one I'm not sure how I would answer in an instant like that without being in that scenario, being completely honest. Because right now I'm thinking with a logical brain rather than a non-logical brain. What would it say? I actually think that's quite impossible to answer. But if I think of some of my own sort of feelings towards the future and my own thinkings of how I would like industry to evolve, you know, it would be creating these one-time hotel luxurious environments that are no longer transient. Because hospitality is very transient in its nature. And for me, you know, it's creating spaces and places that in a world of choice, without these loyalty schemes that we've known for years, where there's points and heads in beds that lure us back into coming along, you know, how can we create these places that evolve as humans evolve? You know, this like evolving hotel that evolves through time. So maybe it would be something like that, you know, something that evolves and grows.
I love
grows.
That.
Yeah. But that's that. My logical head.
Well, it's wonderful. How would it evolve? I'm curious. Can you describe it a bit for us?
Well, I mean, obviously there's activations that we've talked about, but it's just sort of like, how does that hotel evolve in its identity with context? You know, how do we create malleable environments that are... Anything that's fixed is difficult to change, right? So it's creating structures and places that are malleable. How does that look? I don't know. Maybe it's robotics. Who knows? You know, I'm not a very high tech driven person. I'm very human centered. But of course, you know, we use technology with projects. But it's, you know, how can we create spaces that we can evolve and adapt and, you know, change structurally, change via activation, change contextually as well? Because, you know, when we look back over the last few decades, we see hotels that were perhaps once considered as luxury that are now considered as maybe ostentatious. And it's like, you know, we have to not only be able to adapt, structurally, we have to be able to adapt to context and human desire and with the times. So I don't have a complete answer for you with how, you know, how we do that completely. But I think it's just having that ability to be able to adapt, be malleable. Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah,
that's fascinating. I love it. Like, it has its own identity that is not fixed in time for when we created it, right? So when we create something, there oftentimes there are a few years before it's being built, and maybe it's irrelevant by then. And that also takes me to the place of how can we measure and adapt.
Exactly.
And it's so easy when we're designing websites, but when we're designing actual structures, how can we allow for that flexibility and open end kind of approach? I love that. Thank you for sharing. I know it was hard, but that's okay. Part of it.
No, that's fine. I think it's a good challenging question. And I think, you know, what is the key to doing that? You know, maybe hotels need to have human departments. And not just, you know, I mean, we work with all these typical, you know, there's the housekeeping, bar, architects, designers, developers, but maybe we do really need to start thinking about how we integrate this human research element, because it's not going away. And I think people aren't quite realizing just yet how much more important that's going to be. And I think the more we have human departments, and I don't mean HR, I don't mean human resources, I don't mean anything like that. I mean, you know, I mean actually where we become insatiably curious about humans, because that's how we can become malleable and adapt and change and transition and make it human relevant, contextually relevant. And, you know, hopefully as things evolve and design evolves, we can structurally make things different too. So, yeah.
Amazing. Can you imagine someone checking in into an experience or a hotel and having their metrics measured? And then by the end of the stay, being like, oh, you're this much more relaxed. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. And I think you make a really interesting point as well about that kind of transformative nature of travel and, you know, travel experiences. And I think, you know, being able to sort of see that output as well physically, because transformation is quite a hard thing, because how do we know if we're transformed, you know? And ultimately, do we want to be transformed? Some people don't want a pilgrimage, you know. Some people just want to go on holiday and lie on a sunbed and just enjoy it. Some people don't want that pilgrimage of transformation and all the stress that, you know, they don't want that. They just want to go and fly and flop and do nothing. But I think you make a really, really interesting point about that metric side of things, where it's like, you know, how can we measure that and really understand the impact of what our body has just been through versus when we first came to it? You know, how do we, and maybe that's like the exit point, you know, of an experience. You know, we come in, we have that entry point. How does that look at the end, and what does that mean for us, and how does that make it more meaningful of our feeling towards brand? You know, we know that we've transformed in X positive way. Does that then impact our sentiment towards brand of what we've just experienced? So yeah, I love that.
That will definitely make me come back to a place, but I don't know about you.
100%.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll build something together. Let's see.
Yeah, right. I see our wild napkins align.
Right.
I love that.
Brilliant.
Victoria, thank you so much for your time and for your openness. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You.
Until the thank next you. Time, go out and talk to strangers. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.